ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts. Your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic, the Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time, the Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station, and the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast for Friday, November 1st. It's episode 61. Oh, what's up, Dom? What have I done?
Nope, you're good.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. We'll edit that bit out. It's fine. Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast for Friday, 1st of November, episode 61. We'll get good at this one day. And on today's show, we'll be talking about the Ford F-150 Lightning production pause and new NACS adapters. Volvo and Polestar finally get Tesla supercharger access, and Lucid Gravity gets pricing. We now know more details. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the scintillating Mr. Tom Mologany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. And of course, we're joined by Kyle Connor from his majestic, practically palatial halls of Outer Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for all of his YouTube channels. And lots of great stuff to get to today. Might not have Kyle for the whole show today because he's really busy. And so we will get to what he's been driving, a bunch of videos we want to get to from Out of Spec. But first of all, let's get into this. Tom, you're a Ford F-150 Lightning owner. You rate the vehicle very highly. So what's going on with Ford at their Dearborn plant from close of business on November 15th? They're going to turn out the lights and lock the doors until January the 6th. They're stopping production of the F-150 Lightning. Tom, what can you tell us?
Yeah, so I mean, not more than what they've announced. I haven't really gotten any comment from Ford about it yet. I am going to reach out to talk to them about it. But it looks like for 6 weeks, they're pausing production. They're blaming it on slower than anticipated sales. We've heard this from Ford before consistently that, you know, over the last year or so, they aren't hitting the anticipated sales figures for the Lightning. So they've been cutting back on production. Now they're doing a complete pause for 6 weeks. So, not good for Ford. I guess it's a combination of the fact that not as many customers are being open to buying electric truck as they anticipated, combined with the fact that, you know, now there's four electric trucks on the market to, spread the few people that are willing to go for an electric truck. Now they have to battle three other companies, you know, even though only two. The Silverado is really a direct competitor, and that's hitting the market now. So I'd imagine you'd see a big surge of customers going for Silverado, and that might hurt the Lightning more than any other electric pickup truck would, more than the Rivian or the Cybertruck would. So I think they appeal to different customers. There's obviously some overlap for all four trucks, but I think the core Lightning customer is the core Silverado EV customer. And the other two pickup trucks will take some of their customers. So yeah, it's not a good thing. It's really unfortunate. You guys know, and I'll go into my defend F-150 Lightning stance now. You know, for such a large swath of potential pickup truck owners, certainly not all of them, but even a good amount of those that use them for work. And let's be clear, a large amount of pickup trucks in the U.S. are bought to be driven as cars. You know, that people don't use them for work. That's their car to drive to church with and go to the supermarket with on Sunday. For nearly all of those, except for some in some real, you know, middle America, really rural areas where there's no charging and people drive hundreds of miles, for the vast majority of other people, Lightning, you know, would work just fine for them range-wise. It can do the duty that they need to do. I've talked to so many Lightning owners that use the vehicle for work. I mean, I had the F-150 Lightning party here last month, which I still haven't put together my video. I'm going to put the video on soon. So many of those people that pulled up that they use them like exclusively for work and absolutely love them. You know, for landscapers, contractors, things like that, it would work perfectly. And over time, it would save the companies tons of money. Now, I just think there's a bunch of reasons why it hasn't done as well as it could. I think part of the problem is, you know, we still don't have many dealerships, at least some are good, that can convey that to the customer, that can explain to the customer the long-term savings and that, look, this vehicle can do everything you need it to do. And I understand that why we don't, because the dealer, the salesperson, they just want to move a truck. So if it's easier for them to say, look, this diesel F-150 or this gas F-150 here, it costs 10 grand less, and you know how to fuel it, just go for that, because it's a quicker sale. You know, they get the person through the doors and out the doors faster, and they make their commission. And I don't begrudge them for that, because car sales, it's a tough biz. You don't make a tremendous amount of money, and you work really hard. All the profits go up top to management and ownership and dealerships. You know, so that's one of the problems. You know, another problem is we don't have good infrastructure yet, you know, particularly for trucks. If you do take a truck on a long trip, and if you're pulling a trailer, the truck might be able to handle the trip. But let's say you just have to stop once, you're like F-150 Lightning, you're pulling a 6,000, 7,000 pound trailer, and you got to go 400 miles or 300 miles, something like that. So you're going to have to make one stop. The current charging stations, there's almost none of them that can accommodate that easily, where you're not pulling sideways and blocking like the whole charging thing, or you've got to unhook your trailer. Nobody has time for that. No one wants to have to deal with that. So the public infrastructure is a big problem for people that are going to tow, let's say. But even for businesses that aren't going to tow, there's still that perception, I think, that the electric trucks can't do the duty. And in so many instances, they absolutely can, but it takes a while to get beyond that. It's going to be interesting to see, for me, how well Silverado EV sells, because that takes it one step further in what duty it can take on. It can go that much further. It can tow that much further. It has a bigger bed. It can haul more stuff. So it's going to be a real litmus test to me is to see if Silverado does the same thing that Lightning did, where there's kind of a big, rush initially, like everybody wanted to get them. You remember, I got offered like $30,000 more than what I paid for my Lightning a month after I owned it. You know, it was like everybody wanted one. And then 3 months later, it's like, we can't get rid of these things. Mm. So, you know, let's see what happens with Silverado. I think it's going to be interesting, but it's unfortunate because I think a lot of people are missing out. You guys know I love my Lightning. I talk great about it all the time. It's not like I'm this Ford fanboy I never owned, the only other Ford I ever owned in my life was a used Taurus station wagon. You know, so I don't come from like, I'm not looking through my glasses with, you know, blue Ford colored lenses. I just genuinely think it's a great truck. So it's unfortunate. And I think the poor sales performance has more to do with perception than reality.
Mm. Like Kyle, you own a Rivian, you own a Cybertruck, you've raced them ocean to ocean alongside the Ford F-150 Lightning and the Chevy Silverado. And just looking at the popularity of your videos when you make those shows, you know, each of those episodes had like 500,000 views. You know, people are super interested in the trucks, but don't seem to be buying them in big enough numbers. What do you think, Kyle?
Hard to say. I think Tom there's so much competition out there that he spoke about that just makes other trucks do more. I think, you know, you've seen Ford do little updates, little changes here or there, but not breaking through any barriers. Essentially, a Lightning today to a customer walking up to it would have been the same Lightning from 3 or 4 years ago. So it's not new. It's not exciting anymore. It hasn't really drastically improved that much. I'm actually getting a new 24, 25 Lightning on test here pretty soon. They like finally show kilowatt charging on the screen. That's not what's stopping people. But to me, that's what, okay, the slow pace of innovation on existing models is what's kind of bugging me a little bit. But, you know, I think Tom's right there. Everyone who wanted an electric truck had the opportunity to get one and now has one. And they got really cheap in the used market. You know, you got great incentives and deals on them, even new, and everyone who was like on the fence has already made that purchase. So now you need to convince people that 3 years ago when the truck launched, were not interested in an electric truck. These are all new customers that are thinking, oh, maybe now I could go for an EV. Is the Lightning the one to go for? And they have to compete on a level playing field with the competition.
Mm. And right now, Lightning Flash is a ridiculous deal. It really is. And in addition to the low starting price, dealers are given incentives. You get the federal tax credit. There's state incentives. Like Lightning Flash now is ridiculous. Like, I look at that and say, oh, my God, like it'd be like 25 grand less than what I paid for my Lariat. Like, that's a no brainer. You know, I would. You know, that kills resale value for anybody that bought a Lariat or a Platinum in the last year or two. When you look at what you can get with a brand new Flash now, it's like, okay, I won't even think about selling my Lightning. I'm going to hold on for a long time because I couldn't. And it's not even the fact that I can't afford to take a big $10,000 or $20,000 hit. That's not it. It's like personal. Like I will not sell that truck for like $45,000. You know what I mean? It's like, no, but that's probably all I could get for it now. So, but the new trucks, the deals are fantastic.
Yeah, certainly. If you're looking for the least expensive electric pickup truck, it is an F-150, and especially used or new with all the incentives piled on. It is an incredible value. They're very, very, very capable trucks. They're very comfortable. And, for most people that this could and should probably replace their combustion powertrain trucks. They just either don't want to know it or don't know it or have no interest in it. And I think that's a big barrier right here.
Yeah.
Or they watch Scotty Kilmer videos and assume that, you know, it won't turn on if it's below 10 degrees outside.
And I think the perception that it can't tow very far. I think that it's a big strike against it. Someone was mentioning in the comments earlier that people will buy for, you know, what if situations, what if I need to, you know, tow something for 500 miles, then the Lightning is not really a great vehicle for that. But most people don't do that, but it's still got that kind of cloud hanging over. I feel like it was doing good, like the initial sales, like Tom says. But then those videos started coming up with the towing performance, and a lot of people are in the market for pickup trucks are kind of maybe EV resistant already. So hearing, you know, oh, you can't tow with it, you kind of put the brakes on the momentum that Ford F-150 Lightning had.
Let's see what happens with Silverado, Dom, because with this 220 kilowatt hour battery pack, it can tow pretty well. You know, I mean, but again, it still has that same issue. If you are going to tow many hundreds of miles, a combustion vehicle is just better. It's a better choice because of the infrastructure. If we had pull through charging stations, the Silverado charges like a champ. Like I would say, you know, go for that then, because if you could just roll on a pull through station and plug in a Silverado, you know, at 10% and 20 minutes later at 60% or whatever, the thing charges like an animal. Then I would say for it, but there's still instances. But I would love to know, what is the percentage of people that own trucks that need to tow, you know, heavy things more than 300 miles? You know, I that would be a great figure to know. But you can't beat the what if situation that Dominic's talking about. I remember when I first got involved with EVs, that it was all what if. It was like, well, what if I wake up in the middle of the night. My wife has to go to hospital and my car's not charged, you know, like, because I came home and that's when cars went 70 miles. And when you came home at night, you needed to charge. Like you couldn't then just get out and go somewhere. And I heard these what if all the times. What if, you know, I wanted to tow up a mountain that I don't own a boat and I don't live near a mountain, but that you get all the what ifs. That still is in people's psyche, I think. And the fact that there are limiting factors to electric trucks that combustion vehicles don't have, that sticks in people's minds as, yeah, I don't want to take that chance. What if I have to do this in the future? So
I wonder what they've got to do to turn this around and get back on the front foot. Let's talk about what is the model year 2028. So at some point in 2027, we're going to get the new truck built by the team in California who have been somewhat siloed from the rest of Ford. Jim Farley joked that even his pass wouldn't get him in the Skunk Works building. Beg to differ on that. I think he can go wherever he wants to in the business. But he was making the point that they're completely separate. They can make decisions themselves faster and bring that vehicle to market. He pointed out that they've cut EV costs this week by $1 billion over the year, trimmed their battery capacity, which they're moving as well from Poland for the Mach-E to Michigan. Jim Farley said that Ford expects 150 new EV nameplates to enter the North American market in the next 2 years. So by the end of 2026, that's an insane competition. Because it was the earnings call this week, so we got to hear from Jim Farley himself. He said, and I quote, "And we're deep in the design and engineering of our next generation vehicles. Boy, are we excited about these coming out in the next few years. In 40 years in the industry, I've seen a lot of game changer products, but the midsize electric pickup designed by our California team has got to be one of the most exciting. It matches the cost structure of any Chinese manufacturer building in Mexico in the future." So obviously he's looking at, you know, companies like BYD, I would have thought there. And so pitching a lot on the future, but this is not a vehicle arriving the next year or 2 years. It's going to be 2027 for a 28 model year. Kyle, let's talk about what Ford needs. You'd be positive and say, what do Ford need to do then? So we're a long time away from this vehicle. What has that team got to deliver to turn it around?
Oh man, don't put that all on me. That's a lot.
It's all on you. It's all on you now. Rescue Ford.
I think what they need to deliver is what their customers want in that segment. And that's a very blanket statement, of course, but I'm not an expert on market research and product planning and figuring out what that type of customer is looking for. I mean, I could have my wish list of what I would like to see personally.
What's on it then? What's on it?
No, it's not worth going into everything here, but I do think, really it's up to them to show that they're ready to compete in the electric vehicle space at the same playing field that large automakers, BYD, Tesla, Xiaomi, all these other ones are ready to play on. And currently, the best way to describe Mach-E and F-150 Lightning are just hodgepodge, cars from supplier parts from all over the different place, that nothing's really cohesive, that they all kind of need to be stuck together and work together. And that's how cars have been made forever. And that's fine until you start running into some issues and some limitations of the car. Mm-hmm. And there they need to have their own ground up, complete electrical architecture, complete control over their battery and powertrain and chassis, I think, to basically make this cohesive car. One that was this team talks to this team that talks to this team, not a bunch of separate teams that come together to an integrator to glue them all together. And I think that to me is more important than any specific stat or size requirement or feature requirement that they need to do for their next midsize truck. I'm looking for the cohesiveness of engineering.
Mm. Tom?
Software. They have to dramatically improve the software experience. Of course, faster charging, more range for pickup trucks in particular. But, their software is the biggest weak point, in my opinion. I think that's really what Ford really needs to hammer down. And they have hired a whole new team of software people for the next generation software for Fords. I talked to Ford about this extensively last year or maybe even the year before when they first assembled this team. You know, when I talked to Jim Farley in person, not off the record, but just before we had our interview about next generation trucks and, you know, he was grinning ear to ear, which he should be, you know, to get people excited and telling me, Tom, I know you love your Lightning, but he said, once you see the next truck that we have coming out, you're going to want to, you know, you'll forget about your Lightning really quickly, which, you know, he has to say stuff like that. So let's see if that's true or not. But I know, I think Ford got this a while ago, even before the recent thing with Farley, you know, going to China and seeing what's going on over there and how fast they're really expanding and putting out new models. I do believe Ford understood that they need to make a huge change in how they put together vehicles, and they have to be software centric, and they have to compete with, you know, what's the onslaught of competition that we're going to be getting from China.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that is interesting to me, I think we mentioned Ford or talk about Ford every show. we really do talk about Ford a lot, but we do miss a lot of other automakers that are maybe even more relevant in the EV space. And I'm curious why Ford has done this pretty great job, honestly, through their communication teams, through their programs, through their continued interactivity with existing owner base to sort of stay top of mind. I mean, I think that is, you know, beyond just the cars and the engineering, I think they've done something different clearly in their communication strategy that we keep talking about them and talking about them for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea why the heck we're doing it, but it seems natural. It feels right. And so whatever they're doing from a communication side, they're touching the, you know, they're getting their message out, whatever that message needs to be. And we are certainly talking about them, and that is not a critical statement at all. It is a really complimentary one, because there are other companies doing incredible engineering things with cars, and we mentioned them for about 3 minutes on this show. Meanwhile, we're 20 minutes in, and we've only talked about Ford.
Yeah.
No, I agree, Kyle, but look at what they've done as far as why we should be talking about them. They changed the industry by making people switch to NACS, right? One company had to be the linchpin to do that, and Farley said, I'm going to be that linchpin. Then they were the first company to get access. That was probably baked into the deal that if we come out first and say it, we have to get access first. Just recently, they did the whole thing with the Ford Power Promise, where they're going to give you a free 80-amp charger and install it in your house. So they have been active doing things that touch our nerves with like the important industry things. So I think that's part of the reason why.
Mm. And Brendan says, because they changed their plan. Well, yeah, we have to reflect that as well. And also, what are they going to talk about for the next 3 years? Because there's nothing else on the horizon. So maybe we'll talk about them a little bit less until they come with new products, or maybe we won't. I don't know.
What's the revised date for T3 now, Tom? Is it 28?
I think 27 T3.
Okay. So the new midsize one is 28 then, for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about GM a lot when they didn't have anything on the market. And to Kyle's point, yeah, it's somewhat ironic that in Q3, GM had a fantastic quarter. You know, for a long time, the whole business at GM was the Bolt, and then they got rid of that, and they just weren't selling anything. And now they are, and they're not really getting the praise at GM for a fantastic quarter. You know, they've leapfrogged to ahead of Ford in terms of the EV market on the quarter. And, you know, I have listeners to my podcast email me and say, you know, because I've been very hard on GM. I think it was with the recent kind of Ultium U-turn. We're getting rid of all that. And I was a bit more cynical about that. They say, but you look at the job that they're doing. Like, look at the stock price, look at the share price. I've made money on them. You know, my listeners email me and say, but, you know, the CEO is running the business in a really good way. They're making money. And now they've got EVs on the market at just the right time. So, yeah, praise for GM, but it's a good point. Hey, before we move off this topic, Tom Ford are now sending out the replacement NACS adapters. Is that all that problem's all sorted out now? And they've gone with an interesting supplier.
Yeah, so I got an email from Ford like at 10 o'clock at night, Wednesday night, saying, oh, by the way, we've partnered with Lectron, and we understand there's such a backlog in adapters, particularly they had a request. It's not a recall. It's a customer experience program. Please don't say recall. But they need to send out about 4,000 adapters that were, you know, faulty. The Tesla NACS adapters right here, the one that, you know, is being sent out. So now they realize that, look, we can't, there, you know, there's still people that reserve, the Ford customers that reserve these adapters. I think it was February 28th of this year, and they haven't gotten them yet. So, you know, I had a lot of people say, look, I can't believe Ford is going to send out new adapters to the people that got faulty adapters before they're going to send me my first adapter. So Ford gets it. They this has been a mess with offering the free adapter and everything. So they got together with Lectron, and they're putting out, they're going to have selling the regular Tesla adapter and a version of the Lectron adapter. The only problem is when they sent me this three sentence email at 10 o'clock Friday, Wednesday night saying, oh, you could post this 8 a.m. Thursday morning. So I had to get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and make a video. They didn't tell me that it's actually different, and that's not noted in my video. So as soon as I posted it online, the CEO of Lectron and an engineer at Ford was like, oh, wait a minute, it's not the same adapter. But, you know, read my email. It says, you know, we're going to be selling the Lectron adapter. It looks exactly the same. It just says Ford on it. But evidently, this is the Lectron Vortex adapter. And the new one says Ford across it. Looks exactly the same. Evidently, Ford got together with Lectron and said, look, we'd like to sell your product, but we're not happy with it. We need to make a couple of changes. We need an interlock, and a couple things need to be upgraded inside. But if you work with us to redesign it, we'll sell it. We'll carry it. So Lectron, of course, you know, said sure, 100%. So that's what's happening. So this new Ford adapter is slightly different on the inside. You can't tell on the outside. The weird thing is, and I've reached out to Lectron about this, and I've reached out to Ford. Okay, so if I'm Lectron, do I continue to sell the original adapter? Because you have an OEM saying it's deficient in our testing. Lectron stands by the fact that it's not deficient, but that they wanted to make a better adapter for Ford. I mean, Lectron has told me times and time again, I've done interviews with the CEO, multiple interviews, that, you know, they've tested this thing from start to finish, and it could be the fact that it's perfectly fine. It's just that Ford wanted something engineered to a higher standard. I don't know. I'm still working on trying to get these guys to give me an answer on record, and nobody wants to address that yet, at least. But that's the case. So they're going to be shipping out an adapter that looks exactly like the Lectron Vortex adapter, but the guts inside have a couple of minor changes. That's what I've been told.
Mm-hmm. Are they still calling the new one the Typhoon, even though they're slightly different?
No, this is the Vortex. The Typhoon adapter is the A to Z adapter.
Right.
So, it's both. Okay. The names are both silly, you know. CEOs of both companies, like, this is ridiculous giving them these stupid names. Just call it the NACS adapter, please. But anyway, as of now, Dom, yes, they're still selling the Lectron calls it the Vortex. They're still selling that, while they're supplying Ford with a different version of it.
Okay.
All right. That's good news.
It should be good news for Ford customers waiting for their adapter, because Lectron has the capability of making a ton of these. They make adapters. I think part of the reason with Tesla's adapter is they don't specifically make adapters. They make some, but Lectron's like all they do. They have a couple suppliers. They can, say make 10,000 of these. We want them right now, and they can ramp up, I think, faster than Tesla could with the adapter that they're making.
Speaking of news, I just wanted to throw that on the screen there. EVKX just mentioning that the best-selling EV in Norway in October was the Toyota BZ4X. So busy forks. And what does that say about Norwegian EV drivers? I don't know.
They've already got an EV, and the only people who didn't have one are people with no taste, and they've just bought themselves a...
Kyle was saying it's much improved now.
Yeah. It's good that Toyota had a bad week in terms of sales. Their first drop in a couple of years, being hit really hard, 17% down in China, I think, on small cars, because people are buying small electric cars in China. So maybe that will drive Toyota into making a few more EVs. Pete Breen says, hi, Kyle. Thanks for the Model 3 range tests. Now a happy owner of a 24 long range, rear wheel drive Model 3, thanks to Out of Spec. Oh, Pete, well, thank you for your comment, Pete. Oh, that's why Carl makes his videos. And Carl, you have been really busy lately. And actually, some of the videos that we are seeing as people who watch your channel, you've done a little while ago, actually. Now, the Hyundai Ioniq 6 has a lot going for it. It's a car that I think gets overlooked sometimes. But you finally had that in your 10% challenge that we got to see. So how did it do?
I don't know. Let me pull up the website and see. I don't think I even watched the video.
Amazing. There's so many people working on your channel now.
Ioniq 6 you can just go to our website and you can see all the data, but the chart is like we got to make it bigger because you can't quite see all the cars. Oh, it did pretty good. 141 miles. Wow. Almost matching the previous generation Lucid Air.
Wow.
The pre-refresh. And so it is the, I would say, best performing, not expensive car in our test, because Taycan, of course, is almost 200 miles, way off the charts, and this did 140 miles. For those that don't know, 10% challenge is a simulation of a road trip. It's where you arrive to a charging station with 10% state of charge in the battery, charge it for 15 minutes, and then drive 80 miles an hour until you get back to 10% state of charge in a loop to counteract elevation and wind. And it's a great representation of, is this a good road tripping EV? And for under $70,000 or under $60,000, this is the best road tripping EV. But actually, in reality, yeah, I mean, we haven't tested Lucid Pure or the base small battery Taycan. So, you know, this thing just rocks for the money. I mean, this is a $40,000+ car. Low 40s, and man, can it just eat up the miles if you need to cover distance.
Yeah, it gets overlooked a bit, doesn't it? I think for certain reasons, but fantastic technology inside this. Also on the Hyundai Ioniq 6, you also did Hogback Challenge on that, and better, I think, was your sort of summation on that. Better, but still needs major work. Where did it do well, and where did it not do so well?
Yeah, so we run every car through a series of four major tests, and the trucks five major tests. And one of them is just to look at their driver assistance systems and see how they're improving or not over time. And certainly, this is branded as the same system, HDA1, Highway Drive Assist 1, as the Ioniq that we've tested in the past, and Genesis GV60, and all of the other ones that we've run through. But it's done better than any other HDA1 system by not a small amount, but a large amount. So we know they're working on the driver assistance tech in here, which is great, but it's still poor performance compared to other EVs that we've tested or combustion cars for similar money.
That's good news. Did you see the coverage this week? You know, you were talking about your depreciation on your Model S Plaid. Did you see the wider coverage on that?
Yeah. I made one post on Twitter with a single word that just said depreciation, because I was researching for an ownership update video on the Model S. And I didn't think it was a surprise that expensive cars depreciate. And I didn't think it was a surprise that especially Teslas, when they were the most expensive, had depreciated a ton. And it has depreciated a ton. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm happy about it. But I just didn't think it was the biggest news in the world. And everyone shared just the post. And people were like, that's YouTuber crazy. Shocked. Or this guy. I'm like, what? I knew that this thing was going to lose value.
Yeah. Yeah, a one-word post, and not just the kind of irreverent auto media, the sort of Jalopniks of the world, but I saw this spread far and wide just in the general media, who wouldn't have heard of you or your channel or even what an EV is, but they were like, as you say, you know, YouTuber was stunned at his EV mistake, and you're like, it was a one-word post about your depreciation, but
there was no context in there.
It went far and wide. Sorry, Dom, I interrupted.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I was looking, I was on Threads last night looking, and I saw this post. This person had bought a Land Rover or something for 155 or 135, and they were asking people how much they thought it had depreciated. It was 2 years old, and yeah, it's half. They got an offer for like half, so it lost like, 70,000 worth of $70,000 worth of value, I guess. So, you know, expensive cars depreciate. Yep.
I got a letter from my dealer about my Lightning, you know, traded in on a 2025 Lightning Flash. And you know how it gives you your trade-in value? It was like, you know, we'll give you $39.9 for your Lightning. So like, this was like, I think the same day that Kyle's thing blew up. So I'm like, I'm not posting this nowhere. Like, I don't want to be the next, you know, viral meme about the depreciation of electric cars. But
well, I guess I don't see an issue with it. I don't know why. It's not like the articles were wrong. They had the numbers right because I put the numbers in the tweet. I paid $140,900 something before taxes. Tesla offered me $46,000 for it, essentially an over $100,000 loss in just about 2 years, factoring in the taxes that I had to pay on the vehicle, of course, and the registration and everything. So, but that goes into any car. And so, yeah, I mean, certainly if I would not have bought it if I knew that Tesla was going to lower the prices of the new one so much, that is a huge factor to the depreciation. Right. Yeah. Okay. You know, sometimes you win some, you lose some.
So that's the thing that gets overlooked in this depreciation discussion. Sometimes during the COVID thing, you know, 21, 22, Tesla jacked up the prices like crazy high and then cut them. And so all of a sudden, you know, we got automatically like $30,000 worth of depreciation just from price changes. Like that is really like the meat of the thing. It's not like it necessarily depreciates a whole lot faster than other vehicles. Just from a, like if you had like a base value to begin at, it's just like the price has been hacked down by that much that, you know, it really affects depreciation.
Yeah, certainly. And the thing is, like, I don't feel that depreciation until I go sell the car.
Right.
So like to me, it makes no difference. The value went up $100,000. I'm in the same position.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, 100%. We need to make a few more. We need to all watch your videos.
Well, I might be crying when it comes time to sell it.
Yeah, exactly.
Might be coming up soon. I don't know yet. It's not like it's a great situation, but it's like, okay, yeah. So electric cars depreciate quickly. We know that. That's why, especially in Colorado, we've never recommended leasing. Leasing typically doesn't make sense until now, where it's you can totally protect yourself from the downside cost on a vehicle by getting a cheap lease. I just leased Jordan a Model 3. Long range rear wheel drive. And at the effective cost was like around $300 a month. Hmm. And that's going to be his car for, you know, to make videos with for out of spec and everything. So that is way more manageable than having a whole Cybertruck worth of value fall out of the trunk of a Model S.
You lost a Cybertruck. Yeah. That's the way when you put it like that. Wow. What's the latest on your $20 Leaf lease? Are they fixing that?
Yeah, no, they're not fixing it. So apparently it's impossible to fix. So they're replacing the car.
What?
Yeah, they're okay. Getting us a new car. I've never heard of this.
Oh, well. It's pretty rare.
Thanks. Yeah,
I mean, it's not like we lemoned it. So of course we made a video about it. And to be totally honest, the video lit the fire under Nissan where, you know, we got this car for Danny. And, we paid like, I don't know, like 10 bucks a month for it or something like that. 20 bucks a month. I don't remember. It's cheap.
I think it was 20. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's basically a free car. And it broke down at 400 something miles on it. A brand new Nissan Leaf, which is, I thought, unusual. But then I read the comments and other people are dealing with this too. So I'm going to make a detailed step-by-step video on what Nissan did to fix our situation, to make sure that they are also fixing the other situations of the Nissan Leafs in the same way. And if they're not, then we're going to go fly and make individual videos with those people to make sure Nissan does fix their cars, because we should not get any different treatment than a normal customer on that issue. They called Danny. They said, okay, whatever. There was this process. It took a little while. And they're just getting us a new car. And we pick it up on Monday.
Wow. So
I have a similar situation, but with a combustion vehicle. One of my good friends bought a GMC Yukon Denali. I think it's called Ultimate. It's like their top trim. It's like $105,000, right? Wow. Super car. I mean, we've gone out to eat and they've driven. It's like, you know, riding in a giant limo. And he got it in April, I think. So in September, he starts driving. It starts like bucking a little bit. And luckily, he's about 2 miles from the Shell station where he knows the owner and everything. So he makes it to the Shell station, and it's you know, he said it's making all kind of noises and everything. So he get what leaves it running, goes inside, says, come out. Tell me what's going on with this truck. They pop the hood. The guy's listening to it, and he goes, your engine's shot. So he's like, you know, it's got 2,000 miles. Make a long story short, they shut it. They turn it off. They tow it to the dealer. Dealer says, yeah, engine shot.
Wow.
So he's like, I don't want you guys, you know, it's a $105,000 car. I don't want you ripping apart this and putting in a new engine. Make a long story short, there was no fight. Pick a new one off the lot.
Wow.
Took brand new Yukon Denali Ultimate, drives it home. Then like 3 or 4 days later, a good friend of mine is like, three of us were hanging out at this coffee shop where we always go to. You guys have heard, I've talked about this. It's like, Joe, I'm driving down the road the other day and there's a new Yukon Denali and it's smoking, smoke's pouring out of the back. And I thought of you, and we're all like, oh my God, like, you know, this doesn't sound good. When I'm doing the Lucid Air Pure drive, you remember I did the range test drive like two, three weeks ago. I'm on the turnpike. There's a Yukon Denali driving with the temp plates on it. So it can't be more than a month old. Same thing. Blue smoke's pouring out of the tailpipe. GM's got some kind of problem with their new engines, because that's three in like a week that I saw. So it's not just EVs. You know, there's something going on with the Yukon, whatever the 6.2 liter motor or whatever it is, because we saw three of them in New Jersey in 2 weeks. So something's going on there. But they just, like you said, when they gave you a new one, they didn't even fight them. So they must know there's they know there's something going on, but give them a new $105,000 truck.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Meanwhile, I'm watching this guy on I believe he goes by, isn't it Ionic? He's got his Ionic 6, I believe, in the shop for like months and months and months. And it's almost a daily thing with him on social media. Like, they called me today, but they didn't fix it. It was some other issue popped up or whatever. Mm. But so this is things that like this happen, I guess.
Well, yeah. So anyway, I cannot commend Nissan on their process or plan or, you know, expertise in fixing situations. And even this process, I would say, like, it took until we made the video to get to the right people. And then that process has been a pain in the ass. So it's still like not, you know, you buy a new car and it's still like not a good experience, even though they're replacing it. It's like, you got to call this person and fill out this form and, you know, do this thing. And then, you know, because Danny's car was so new, it was still on temporary tags when it went in to Nissan. They couldn't take the car back until it was registered. So he had to go and pay to go register a car that was broken and then wait for a refund of that, from Nissan to then pay for the new car's registration. And it's just been back and forth and back and forth. And it's taken months.
Wow.
So it's they're doing the right thing, but the process to do the right thing is still a pain in the ass.
Saw this week the spy pictures in Japan of the new Nissan Leaf being tested. Honestly, it looked kind of like a little baby VW ID7. Had camouflage on, so you can't really tell, but it looks like a typical saloon EV swoopy aero kind of style. Nothing like the old Nissan Leaf, by the way. I'm not even sure they are going to call it the new Nissan Leaf. It will be made in Sunderland, the northeast of England. And I think that's coming in 2025. So it'll go alongside the Aria. So Nissan will have some more stuff to talk about, which is very, very exciting.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
We talk about Ford too much, really. So it would be nice to talk about Nissan more.
Let's get some Nissan news on. Let's talk about a vehicle that didn't blow up in the first 5 minutes. Your friend Timon bought himself a used 2018 Model 3 Performance, which is, you know, in EV terms, practically geriatric. I got a walking stick and, a disabled pass. It's got 40,000 miles on it, which is very low. Battery capacity, 84% 6 years later. So what do you think? Is that high, low, or what you'd expect for a battery capacity left, Carl?
No, it seems significantly less capacity than I expected. Doesn't seem good. Really? So there's two things that affect longevity. The first would be the, you know, of course, aging of the battery pack due to time. And the second would be aging of the battery pack due to use. And because use happens over time, they're always a bit interlinked. But you know, we don't know the total history on this particular Model 3, other than there were signs pointing to maybe an abusive relationship in the sense that, you know, it had some bruises, some dings, some dents, some worn out bushings. And when Timon bought the car, we went into it knowing all that. We went into it knowing that it looked like it didn't have the perfect degradation just by gauging the you know, expected mileage at 100%, which is no way to gauge degradation. Mm. But it just paints a picture at when you only have, you know, 30 minutes to assess the car before you make a buying decision. And it basically we ran the full degradation test. I did the in-car battery health test, and we ran it from full to dead and looked at how much energy we can pull out of it, which is the only real way to measure degradation. And it both numbers came back at 84%, which was great. And in terms of they at least agreed with each other, but the percentage of degradation is higher than you would expect. My I just tested a 2013 Model S with 120,000 miles on it, and it only lost 10%. So you know, a six-year-old car with 40,000 miles doesn't make much sense until you start to learn about the ownership history. It was owned in Arizona, where it gets incredibly hot. And Tesla used to tell their customers to charge to 90% daily, or maybe this person was charging to 100% and letting the car sit in hot weather. That would be really the only thing I can think of that would degrade the battery that fast.
Have you done your battery? You have, because you have the same year Model 3 performance, same car basically, but with a lot more miles on it. Have you checked that?
Yeah, it's been a year and a half, I think, since we've done it. But that only lost about 10 or 11% in 100,000 miles. It was 106,000 the last time I checked it.
Right.
So mileage has less of an effect than storage and aging.
Right. I need to check mine, I guess, see what happens. I have the same year car and see what see what's up with that. Oh, thank you, John. John Chick is asking, Kyle, how long did it take to do that Tesla battery test? How many hours?
It's totally variable depending on what state of charge you start the test. Right. So they say less than 50%, but I try and get them down to as close to zero as possible. So 1%, 2%, because it has to use the thermal systems of the car to drain the excess energy to dead. And then it charges up the battery and sees how much energy it can add. You as a user can't do this because you don't have the battery meter in the vehicle unless you put a current clamp over the battery. If you look at this, what I should say is if you're not using this health test mode, like if you want to see how much energy your EV has that's not a Tesla and you drain it to zero and charge it at home and look at how much energy you've added, well, you can't do that because it factors in so many losses that go through running pumps and AC to DC conversion loss. And so at least with Tesla, they're able to see how much energy is going into the battery because they have a meter in the car that they're allowing you to read. And that's what gives you back this health. But I believe, at least I thought, that the health test factors in other wear and tear components such as isolation or resistance beyond just degradation. However, in this test, the degradation number and the health test number were matched. And what we want to do is run a couple more of these on various Teslas just to see exactly if it is just looking at degradation or a percentage of health of the entire system.
Interesting. Good stuff.
And I didn't answer his question. How many hours? It would take, add like 4 hours for it to drain itself to zero, especially if you start at low state of charge and then go to 100. The test says it could take about 24 hours, but it depends, of course, on your speed of AC charging.
Mm. All right. Mm. Well, we will get to Volvo Polestar accessing superchargers in a moment and Lucid Gravity pricing. While we've still got you, Kyle, before you go, Porsche Taycan's been in the driveway recently. You talked about it, I think, last week, actually, but we see some videos online now. You put it through a proper 70-mile-an-hour range test, and it blew past the EPA rating. Can you remember how that one did?
Yeah, it did great, really great. Almost 370 miles, something like that.
What?
70 miles an hour. Yeah.
Wow. It was really good. Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. It's direct competitor, I would say. The Lucid goes way farther.
Yeah.
But then Taycan can charge way faster. And so that's the whole point of our, you know, cross-country race that is premiering the first driving episode tomorrow.
Ah, and I was going to ask. These so cars that's, in there. Right, that's tomorrow. So yeah, my favorite comment on your first video you put out 6 days ago, which was apart from this is like, you know, Avengers Assemble for EV nerds, which is true, which I thought was great. But somebody who watched the hour long video you put out last week, I went, what the hell? This is the intro. Like, well, we did tell you that was the intro, on at least on this podcast. So that video's out already for your drive from Seattle to Boston, the I-90 surge. And so the next one's this weekend. We can watch that.
Yep. So this weekend you'll have 40 minutes. It's still a really long intro of being introduced to the teams and strategy. That's where, you know, it's not just me. I'm really not in the video very much, but it's just the teams talking about how they're going to optimize the car. You get to know the people. And then the next few hours, the whole video is 3.5 hours long for the first episode. And then you'll be able to see the action leaving Seattle and heading east.
Fantastic. 3.5 hours. Wow. That's, it's good stuff. We like that.
Lots as of, expected. So it lots is, of, is what it'll be. Yeah.
Loads of positive comments on the first one, at least. Yes, we love it. We love the long videos. Keep making long videos. So as I said last week, it's my new telly. YouTube is my new Netflix. That's cancelled. Amazon Prime is cancelled. I just watch YouTube these days. I mean, I pick and choose. Like, there's so much rubbish on there. But if you're good at curating your own content, that's my whole new telly. So that's out this weekend. All right, I think sort of the stuff we wanted to get through in terms of what we've been driving this week.
Well, right. I mean, if we're able to talk about what we've been driving, maybe I can talk about what I was driving this week.
Oh, please do. Please do.
But happy to skip it if you guys
want
to.
No, we've got all the time in the world. Okay, no, we've got time. Okay.
So I have a, well, I'll start with the, I have like 5 or 6 new cars we haven't talked about, but we have, we have a Generation 2 Rivian R1T in the driveway.
Ooh, that looks good too.
These are all test vehicles, of course. So The Gen 2 is really, cool. It's a dual motor, max pack, aero wheels. So we're going to do all of the range test, charging test, all of that stuff on there. And I've also going to do it a lot of versus Cybertruck. So I have a friend who just bought a new dual motor Cybertruck. It had the all-terrain wheels and tires, but I called Tesla yesterday and I said, hey, can you send us either a Cybertruck on aeros or a set of wheels for one? And they were like, no problem. We will overnight a set of aero wheels and tires, which is crazy.
Wow.
So that's we'll be amazing. Able to really do these great side-by-side comparisons, which will be awesome. And so I'm excited about all of that. I think the Gen 2 should be interesting in the driver assistance test because it's a different system than Gen 1. And the range and charging, I'm not expecting a huge improvement, but little things here and there should give it this should be the longest range Rivian they make, because R1T is always slightly more efficient than R1S in our testing, which is interesting, but it always works out that way.
And what else is in the driveway?
Yeah, so then we also have 3 electric Chevys in the driveway. Ooh. That we can talk about. So I have an Equinox EV, a Blazer EV, and a Silverado EV all here for a few weeks of GM, you know, just getting caught up on all the cars for this model year. And I have to say, everyone's been really impressed with them.
Really?
Yeah. Everyone's been loving them, driving them. That, you know, Timon's been like driving the Blazer around. Ryan had the Equinox for a bit. Like, people are just liking these cars, as am I. I really like the Equinox EV. I think that's, that's a really nice driving car. I like it more than the Blazer, personally. Also, the Blazer we have is 56 grand and doesn't have heated seats. So I don't know what's up with that. But the Equinox has them, and the Silverado has them in our specs. And but I love the Silverado EV. That's like a vehicle built for me. 200 plus kilowatt hour battery. Love that thing.
Sounds like Kyle's starting to get it. You know, for the last year or so, how many times do you say, I really don't get why Tom's all into the Equinox EV, you know, all he keeps talking about. So I think Kyle's starting to get a little Equinox love going on there.
And it's for different reasons than you, Tom. I love the software.
I'm kind of agnostic about the software. I don't hate it. I don't think it's anything great. But in any event, so we're talking about what we're driving. Kyle's got some great vehicles over there, but I got to admit, I'm trumping them this week. I have a Hyundai Ioniq 5N.
Nice.
That thing is, it really surprised me. I've seen the videos, I've seen people doing it, but driving it, you know, guys, I've always talked about not loving artificial sound, and even the companies that make talk about, you know, gears, like, you know, artificial gears or whatever. This thing's a hoot to drive. Kyle, have you driven it? I know I saw you did a video, like a walk around back when they first, I don't know if you were at a Hyundai event or somewhere else, but the thing is nuts. I mean, I know there's cars that are faster than it, you know, like the Model S Plaid is faster, would beat it in a straight line race. But as a driving car, I don't think I'd have to get into a Taycan again, because I haven't driven a Taycan in a while. I don't know if there's a better like driving EV out there.
Multiple track days in these, thousands of miles in 5N.
Oh, and, I didn't know that.
Know the car super well. And yeah, they're great. They're heavy. It's very heavy. And it has great thermal management, good, lots of different settings and stuff. I still don't totally love the seating position. There's stuff about the car from a dynamics perspective that does bug me a little bit, especially like brake pedal feel. And, you know, it is just a heavy car. There's no way around it. And I still think a Model 3 at road speeds, like a Model 3 performance at road speed, feels more natural than this. However, on track, this is a whole nother level. It has consistent performance. It's fun. It's fast. It's unbelievably well engineered. I've done so much between Pikes Peak in this car and track days and meeting with their engineering team. They put so much effort into this thing. It is not just a trim level of Ioniq 5. It's a completely different body in white with extra welding and stiffening. It has a completely different suspension kinematics and settings. It's unbelievable. And the powertrain is crazy. And after really driving these things for a long time now, I almost bought one. I really came within a minute of buying one. And the only reason I didn't was because when I finally came around to, okay, I'm going to stomach the loss in the Model S, I'll sell that and then I'll get this one. It had sold at the dealer that I was going to work with. And I'm really particular about the dealers that I work with, because I like to support the people who support us.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then I'm seeing, okay, they're actually sitting on lots for a while after that, and the prices are kind of dropping. So then I'm like, I'll just wait for them to depreciate a bit, because if I do get one, I just want to go full track car. And who cares how it was driven before I got it. So we'll just buy the highest mileage, rattiest one and put a cage in it and go rallying. But it's an amazing car.
And Kerry M. Poach, just turn off the fake engine sounds. I've never been a proponent of the fake engine sounds, but they are fun in this car. It actually works in this car. I mean, they even have like back pressure, like fart can sounds when if you take a gear too high, let off the accelerator, you get that blah, 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 blah. And actually, I was grinning ear to ear just driving it, because it's just... it's fun. Do I think I would leave it on all the time? Probably not, but definitely every now and then I would put it on. And it's just like, it's so unlike anything I've driven electric as far as the gears and everything. It's really a blast. And I think they did the gears well. It actually feels natural, pretty natural at least. There's like an 8-gear simulated gearbox, and it actually works. It's been a lot of fun. And I did the 70 mile an hour range test for it. I actually did it for Inside EVs. That's going to be up on Inside EVs YouTube channel next week. It outperformed its EPA range rating. And something crazy, watch the whole video. If you do watch it, watch the end, because so I time it perfect where I'm going to roll into the Electrify America charging station about a mile and a half beyond zero. You know, it hit 0 miles remaining, 0% state of charge. Perfect timing for me. I was able to swing it, except I wasn't paying attention at the end when I put it in the nav system. Actually, I think I did it vocally and just said, I had it go to Walmart in Brunswick, not Electrify America, because I didn't want it to turn on battery conditioning and drains. So I said Walmart. And so as I get off the highway, I'm like, oh, this nav system's taking me a little bit of a different way. It was the same exit, same road, but I got off at a different street, which that happens from nav system to nav system. And I thought maybe there's traffic and it was routing me. So I as I'm pulling up to the Walmart, I'm like, this isn't Walmart with Electrify America. So I didn't know there were two Walmarts in Brunswick. So I'm rolling in now I'm driving almost 2 miles beyond zero. I get into the parking lot and I'm like, this isn't where I need to be. I check. It's 6 miles away. Wow. So now I've already gone 2 miles, but and I'm like,
problem in a Hyundai. They go 30 miles past the
I was gonna call you live during the, because I'm filming this and everything, and be like, Kyle, I know you probably have, how far will it go? And so I checked to see if there were any level two chargers near me. There weren't. There was an EVgo station 0.8 miles away out of service. They shut it off yesterday for like repairs. So I'm like, the closest place is 6 miles away now. So I actually did it, and I did it live on camera and everything as I'm driving, and I made it. But you know, it was a little nerve wracking at the end, because I'm like, I don't know. Some cars have great range afterwards, but I haven't driven a Hyundai Beyond Zero in, I don't know, a couple of years. And I was really like, I might just run out on Route 18. So I stayed in the slow lane so I could just pull over if I had to. But it made it. And
there is, you know, no one with more experience of EGMP buffer than Dominic Yoni over here. Yeah. He knows all about that. And so, yeah. Dominic, I mean, there's a car scanner app that will tell you how many kilowatt hours are left until it hits zero. And right. Usually how many are below zero in there? Like 5 kilowatt hours sometimes?
Enough to go just about 20 miles if you go slow enough.
Yeah, and even more. I mean, I did 32 miles past zero, I think, in EV9 at 70 miles an hour. And so it really does just go. I don't know about 5N though, because that's a new battery. So, but there is like a little metric somewhere that can tell you how many kilowatt hours the BMS thinks it has in reserve. But Tom, right. The charging performance of that car is what I'm more curious about, because it has, I'm actually getting one on Thursday this week. Cause we have never run it through our normal, like, official loops here.
Yeah.
We've done everything with a 5N has been in California. And so we are getting one here to run the instrumented numbers, but the charging must be wild. Everyone in the forums is saying 270, 275 kilowatts or above.
So I pulled into the Electrify America site that I went to just opened yesterday. It was the site that I've been to before. They have 10 chargers, but it's been closed for 3 weeks because Electrify America just upgraded them to the new balanced chargers. And so it went live yesterday, but it still wasn't on the map yet. So I couldn't even use my Electrify America account to charge. I had to swipe a credit card. So there was no one there because everybody still thought it was closed. It's not on the map. So I had it to myself. I think I peaked at like 266 or something like that, but it held it for a while, but then it did a massive derating and went down to like 40 kilowatts for a while. I haven't mapped out. I recorded it all yesterday, 0 to 100. And now today I'm going to record 10 to 80. So I just got to go drive it today, like 120 miles, just so I can get the battery down. So I'm going to have a recording soon to 0 to 100 and 10 to 80. Really soon, but it rocked the two. It started at like 250, plugging at zero, it went up to like 250 almost immediately. And as the battery voltage went up, you know, it went up a little bit to like 265 ish. I think I wasn't watching it because I was trying to help. A guy pulled up in a BMW iX and he was freaking out because he couldn't get it, the charger to start. It wasn't on a map. He couldn't use his map. He didn't have a credit card. I made him call the Electrify America, and then they couldn't remotely authorize a charge. So then I'm done now, and I'm ready to say, look, I know my credit card works on this charger. So when I leave, come over here, I'll swipe the card for you and charge. And right when I'm going to say that for him, he says, you know, I really don't need to charge. I'm at like 55%, but I wanted to come over and just top off a little. So I'm like, okay, I'm not putting that on my credit card, you know? So, but yeah, if anybody lives in New Jersey, the South Brunswick EA is open, but it's not, unless they did it today, you need to bring your credit card, and it's the new balanced chargers.
Yeah. So 5N, I'm excited to, cause I have not done any charging tests on it at all. It's just been performance related testing. So we haven't done any range efficiency charging stuff. So it's cool to hear that it outperformed EPA, cause EPA is really bad on it. Unbelievably bad, because it's worse than the other five Ioniq 5s and has the new bigger battery. Yeah. So it's like, what the heck is going on? I don't know why it's so bad.
So 220 is EPA, 201 is highway EPA. And I'll, spoiler alert, I ended up with 230 miles. So, you know,
that's still not great for an 80 something kilowatt hour pack.
I know, but it's got big, wide, sticky Pirelli P0 tires. It's what,
275s?
275 35s. Yeah. They weren't in great shape. I could tell who's ever been driving it before me has been driving it like it should be driven.
Yeah.
You know, so But I will say this, it was perfect temperature. It was 84 degrees in New Jersey on October 31st. It was 84 degrees, you know, so, and there was like no wind. So that is 230 is best case. You're never going to get better than that at 70 miles an hour in an Ioniq 5M because it had everything in its favor.
Wow. Yeah. I'm really curious to see how it does here because it's getting cold now. It was snowing yesterday.
Wow.
So yeah, curious. I mean, it's warm today again. We're doing all of our Chevy range testing today, but I'm curious to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what you do with the Equinox. You have front wheel drive or all wheel drive?
We have all wheel drive.
Oh, so my range test was with mine, which is front wheel drive. So I'm interesting to see what you get in where you are in colder weather with the all wheel drive. I think I did 301.
Yeah.
So
we'll run both eventually. We just they just sent us one of each, and they're all, you know, sort of high spec cars.
Kyle, did you say last week you did put a reservation down on a Scout? Which one did you put a reservation down on?
Both of them.
Yes. Yeah. All electric versions? Didn't have to choose?
No, I think you can adjust it later, but I did the range extenders for both.
Yeah. I imagine you can change it.
You and
it
everybody
later.
Else.
Yeah, you and everybody
else. Of course, why wouldn't you? I mean, the thing that they don't say, which I spoke to the lead engineer, so right now the intention is for the range extender to have a smaller battery. What I'm hoping is they give us all the battery and the range extender, which would be the perfect solution for me.
Mm.
Right.
The
RAM version, what do they call it? Not the RAM charger, the RAM
RAM charger.
RAM RAM, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
No, RAM charger is the
electric
extended range one. Yeah.
The EREV one, whichever one. Yeah. I was talking to my listeners this week about the BYD truck, which they have in Mexico, but also it's gone to Australia, which is a similar principle of using the gas engine. And one of my listeners said, you got confused. You didn't say whether it was a series or serial or parallel hybrid system. It's both in that BYD. So you have the engine, which goes through a single speed front transmission. So the engine won't work below 70 kilometers an hour, which is a bit interesting. But it can mechanically drive the front wheels at highway speeds when it's, you know, the efficiency of combustion fuels. But ultimately, it's dual electric motor, one front, one rear axle, which, again, a lot of off-roaders, people who use that vehicle for serious off-roading won't like because it's all done with, you know, the software and the algorithm. No mechanical linkage from front to rear. But either way, fascinating technology. And it's selling really well. Like Australia is a much smaller market. But in the first day, 2,000 orders of this Shark 6 thing that is, Aussies aren't giving up their petrol, or they've still got that backup. Ultimately, though, the engine works nearly all of the time as a generator, as an extended range. So, fascinating little thing. I'm not surprised that people ordering the Scout Motors on the Scout Motors forum, self-declared interest, as it, you know. So, but it's a good data point. 81% of people on the forum, when they put the poll up, said that they've ordered or pre-ordered, put a reservation down for the range extender, which makes sense. 81%. That's whether it's accurate or not, obviously Scout Motors have all the accurate data that will be able to guide them over the next 3 years on what kind of vehicle to make and what the consumer, at least in 2024, wants. Mm-hmm. And whatever they deliver, we'll see what they deliver. What
I would say is a battery electric Scout would work totally fine for my needs. However, if you're giving me the option to have another cool piece of thing to play around with that I can, you know, fuel up even quicker, why am I going to say no to that?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just see what the battery size is of that, which wasn't disclosed. We got the dimensions wrong last week, saying it was, you know, Hummer sized. It's not. It is 91 inches. That was the Hummer size. 79.9 inches wide. It's Ford F-150 width. Sorry about that last week. And as I think we all knew, or at least all assumed, because they were talking about how it would be a software-defined vehicle and zonal architecture, Scout Motors will use the Rivian technology. So Rivian and Volkswagen are doing a joint venture business that VW are putting $5 billion into, and Rivian are bringing the tech. The chief software officer, Wasim Ben Said, who has been on both Tom and Kyle's channel, was at the TechCrunch Disrupt conference this week and said he confirmed that Scout Motors will use the Rivian software and technology stack, which I think we all assumed, but it was good to get confirmation of whether we did get it confirmed last week. I forget, but I saw that and I was like, well, that makes perfect sense. So yeah, some good bits of Scout news this week. How are we doing for time? Right, 20 minutes left. Two more topics.
Yeah.
Two more topics we definitely want to hit this week.
Okay.
Polestar. Volvo Polestar got access to, or will get access to, the Tesla Supercharger network. And when did that start? Did that kick in immediately, or was that part of the date?
I think it kicked in right away. Yeah, the access kicked in right away.
So the access kicked in straight away. 2025 model year cars come with an adapter. Existing Volvo Polestar owners can order one for $230 or $310 Canadian. On November 18th, the Volvo app and the built-in Android Automotive start showing Tesla superchargers. So we're a couple of weeks away from that. But yeah, almost 18,000 superchargers now in North America open to Volvo Polestar. The press release was a little more vague than others have been in terms of specific dates. No specific date on when native NACS comes to those Volvos built in North America by the look of it. But, you know, absolutely, you know, really important to make that announcement and also to get that access, which is fantastic. And Ford, we'll come back to that, you know, being good at getting PR. Ford made a big deal about their update to Android Auto this week. So a bit like the Mustang Mach-E's got back in 2022 with Apple CarPlay to integrate that properly. Charging, the Ford Android Auto integration's properly done now. So you should start to get some over-the-air updates if you use Android. It gets access to the BMS, so you can charge, you can nav on a road trip, and it will plot, as Google and Android Automotive is very good at doing, it's almost the Tesla experience in terms of knowing the percentage that you should arrive at each station at, how long you should stay, and if you obviously stay a bit longer or, you know, whatever, then you get back on your destination. It then recalculates all your route. All very good, and that is finally coming to Ford Android users as of now, I think, Tom. Is that right? Is that rolled out to you yet? I know you use Android and you have an F-150. Oh, you might be muted.
So I haven't received an update yet.
Okay. But that will be coming.
Although it might be sitting in the truck. I've been driving the Hyundai for the last few days, so maybe it did come and I just haven't turned the truck on.
So that's all good. Anything more to say about Volvo Polestar access? Anyone?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to do it this weekend or maybe early next week, but I have a Polestar 3. I've got, we've got a Polestar 2 and my 1. So we're going to bring all three of them over and see what the heck happens.
Oh.
I think the 1's not supposed to work, right? But the 1's got CCS, right? Or not CCS.
The one works perfectly on Magic Docs. So I'm curious if I can activate it with a Tesla app and with a Polestar 2 or 3 selected, or maybe even 4, and then see if I can get my 1 to charge.
It's interesting. They didn't put that in their press release. They didn't even mention the Polestar 1, but it might be because there's like so few of them out there, and it's like they don't want to waste the ink. I mean, how many are in the hands of...
They quantified by saying all electric Polestars.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, it has CCS ports, so why, and it works on Magic Dock. So, you know, it's interesting.
I can't imagine a single Polestar 1 owner wanting to go charge other than, I've got a couple friends actually. Okay, there's like three people.
And I was thinking about doing what you're doing, Kyle. I have a friend that has a Volvo XC40 to borrow it and go to the Tesla supercharger. But then I'm like, I'm deciding, like, every time a new company gets one, should I go with my adapters and say, oh, these all work? Like, the adapters are passed through. They're all going to work on every car. It's like, I don't know if I'm going to continue. I know it was a big deal when Ford and Rivian and GM, and it's like, so I'm like, should I just keep doing that now? Probably. It's probably good to do it just to have the video out there. So if people are scanning and looking, like, does Volvo work on supercharger? It'll come up. But it's kind of like... Like, we feel like we're over it now. These cars are going to work on Tesla superchargers. They're going to charge just fine. And the interesting thing is, I haven't put this video out yet, but I've done so much supercharging and DC fast charging with my Equinox. It's all I do. I don't level 2 charge it at all, just to get videos and videos and videos. And I'm going to eventually put out a master DC fast charging Equinox video with over 30 DC fast charging recordings. And it's charging fastest on Tesla superchargers. The Equinox, the times are like a minute or two shorter all the time. It's so weird.
Okay, interesting. I'm going to take over to our supercharger to do some stuff with it. But are you not overheating cables with it?
I'm on the EVgo's, Electrify America's, all different chargers, Kyle.
Shouldn't they have the same like taper percentage?
Yeah, for the most part. I haven't plotted
20%, right?
I haven't plotted them all out, but the ones that I've plotted, the charging curves are extremely similar. Even, it's like you get that certain amount of time when you plug in to get the full amperage, and then it drops. That's what it appears, at least. I haven't put them all out. I'm doing multiple 0 to 100, 10 to 80, 20 to 80, 30 to 80, 40 to 80, and 50 to 80 charge recordings, and just going to massively put them on a chart, and then do an average charging curve and everything. It's going to take a long time. It's a lot of data, as you know.
Yeah,
but that's all I do now.
Noticing the same with Silverado, because I've been working on that charge curve since we have it, and it's doing. There's no situation in which I can go 0 to 100 and get a perfect charge session. I have to, basically fill in those gaps of what the theoretical peak charge rate is per state of charge percentage. Yeah. It's taken 7 or 8 different sessions to fill that in so far.
And let me point this out. It was 1 minute faster, the supercharger. So it's not like anybody would notice, but when you're doing all these recordings and plotting it out, it is it's faster. I don't know why. It's been faster so far.
Is the handshake about the same length?
Yeah, the handshake doesn't count on. I start it when the charging session starts. The time starts then.
So Wasim asks if the Polestar 3 or EX90 will be able to pull 660 amps from the supercharger. That is my biggest question. That is the question of the century, which is why I'm stealing a Polestar 3 as soon as I have literally a free second and going to bring it to a supercharger just to see what the heck happens. Because Tesla knows you're using an adapter, because currently there are no NACS equivalent Polestar 3 or EX90s.
Yeah.
So since they know you're using the adapter, and they know there is no adapter rated at over 500 amps, because this is the first non-Tesla to pull more than 500 amps, will they pull more than 500 amps? I don't know. In Europe, when you use Tesla superchargers with CCS, yes, they go to full amperage, no question. But will they say, you must be using an adapter, therefore we're going to limit you to 500 amps, or we'll just give it everything it wants? And I hope they just give it everything it wants.
Of course. I bet you they will. My bet is they're going to give you everything they want. How long does it pull over 600, over 500 amps, Kyle? That's the question.
Yeah, wow.
Because I've talked to all the adapter manufacturers extensively. I talked to their engineers, and they've all told me, Electron, A to Z, that these are designed. Yes, they say they're 500 amp adapters, but they're like, we've run like 800 amps through them for 45 minutes or an hour or 2 hours. I think A to Z told me 24 hours they ran like 700 amps through it or something like that, continuous, and it didn't overheat. There were no problems and everything. So the adapters can handle it, can everything else.
Well, the adapters might handle it when there's a perfect connection. And like, I've never been one to there's always a risk when using an adapter. There's an extra unnecessary connection point that, is just not ideal. There's no way around that. So I don't know what Tesla will do. We're going to find out here pretty soon. And as far as I know, like, customer deliveries of Polestar 3 are just started, but in Denver, they have not started to deliver them yet. Software bugs, issues here, issues there. Man, it's been a disaster of a car launch for them. I got to do a video on it, because it's been absolutely dreadful for Polestar to get this car out, and it's been screwing over their customers. And I think it's really a shame that they did not have this car sorted ahead of time. But anyway, they have a test drive car here in Denver. They're awesome. They always hook us up. So I'm going to go steal their test drive car, bring it to a supercharger, and see what the heck happens. And I'm really curious to see what happens when I use a Magic Dock. So when I use the Magic Dock thing built in, I wonder if the amperage will be different then.
Hmm. I spent a long time last week talking about small cars because of the Paris Motor Show. So Renault 4, Renault 5, Renault Twingo, Nissan are going to make a same size vehicle on the little Twingo platform for €20,000. I'd call it Micra, because the Nissan Micra is famous in terms of a nameplate. But time to talk about some bigger cars. We've mentioned already That Polestar 3. We've got the Range Rover Electric coming before the end of the year. We've got the Hyundai Ioniq 9, numerical 9. Used to be called S-E-V-E-N, but it sounds a lot smaller than the Kia EV9s. They're both called 9s because it's the same similar car. That's coming very soon. But one that we'll be able to register your interest or make a reservation, actually, before all of those. Oh, by the way, Range Rover said this week they have 48,000 people on the Range Rover Electric reservation list, which is a good number. Maybe that's like a hand-raisy interest list. The Gravity from Lucid Motors, that is November 7th. You can make a reservation for that. Now we've got some hard numbers on that we can do in the last 10 minutes of the podcast today. So orders open 7th. That's next Thursday. Pricing of the Grand Touring. So that comes first. There's two trims. The first one, and they're a year apart as well. So the first one is the Grand Touring trim. Begins production this year. Starts at $94,900 in the US, which is, ballpark. What you'd expect. The more affordable touring trim goes on sale in about a year's time. We'll see how demand for the Grand Touring goes at $79,900. So now we have the prices, and then we are a good week away, I think, from finding out more details. I guess that's pretty much in line with where you'd expect a big three-row like the Gravity to sit.
Yeah.
Anyone?
$80,000, that's kind of the price we were expecting, but to get that one, you have to wait a year. So we got a year at $95,000 basically. It's a big price tag, but for the people who get it, I think they're going to be pretty happy and pretty impressed with the vehicles, from what I can tell at least. I'm really looking forward to watching Kyle get a hold of it as soon as possible. And any news on that front, Kyle? You have any Gravity in your future?
For some reason, it just always peters out. I don't know why we haven't been able to get a Gravity locked in yet.
Okay.
Oops. I don't know if anybody's had one locked in yet. Maybe they.
I don't think. I don't. Haven't seen any videos or anything yet. I'm not sure. I assume they have a big program, like a first drive program. But yeah, we see you now, Kyle. You're back.
Yeah,
that's all right.
That all looks good. So that we get that before the end of the year, as well. So I think next week we'll probably find out some more details on that one. What else is going on this week?
On the Gravity, can I just mention something really quick? When Lucid presents numbers, and Tesla does the same thing, which annoys me, they show you the maximum performance, the maximum range, and the minimum cost. And you can never combine all of them in one car.
Right.
That sets people up for a little bit of this conversation, which is, by the way, the one you had in your head you thought you were going to get isn't the case.
Yeah. We'll wait and see what the numbers are. What was the range on that, Dom? Was it 440?
440, I believe. 440 miles. That's
the big number.
And they said
three-row SUV.
They said more than 440. I know it says 440 on the website, but every time I've talked to Lucid, they've said it's going to be more than 440. Maybe that's changed.
But that's just an EPA cycle. And we've never had a Lucid beat EPA, I don't think.
Okay. You did just now.
No, it came so
grand. The Grand Touring
did not beat EPA.
Okay.
It was like 3 miles short or something.
It was basically matched.
Okay. That's over many miles. That's not bad.
Impressive. But, it is just worth mentioning when we say 440 miles range that it is in the newer EPA drive loop cycle, and knowing Lucid, like what they did with the launch of Air, it's going to be 450. I hope. Because remember when the Air launched, they're like, oh, it's going to have this range, it's going to have this whatever, and they were just like, it's got more, it's got more. And so I'm hoping they do the same thing, because that really works.
Yeah. And that's their jam, right? Efficiency and range. So they do good business with that. Mark says in the comments, addressed to you, Tom, have you tested the A to Z Nebula EVSE, vehicle to home compatible, and J1772 NAX? Is it available now? Any thoughts, Tom?
Yeah, no, I haven't yet. I've stopped taking chargers from companies temporarily because I have too many over here that I have to review. And it's like one of those things where, I have boxes stacked up, and every time I walk by them, I get anxious. Because I'm like, geez, like they gave me that one 4 months ago. I said I was going to get it done in a month, and this one. I have to dedicate a chunk of time and stop doing any other EV stuff like range tests and charge recordings, and just record and just do like 10 reviews of chargers. I think I'm going to do that towards the end of this year. But the next review I'm going to do, actually, which I'm psyched about, is from our sponsor, the Grizzle E Mini I have, which is a really good, small, portable, powerful charger, Wi-Fi. I mean, it comes with an app and everything. So that's going to be the next one, the Grizzle E Mini. But then I have a bunch more. God, I'm looking at them now, getting anxious. I haven't, Nebula, sorry. All the companies keep emailing me, what's your address, let me send you a charger to review, and right now I'm just like, hold off. Once I get this down to like only two or three here that I haven't reviewed, then I'll start taking a few more boxes in. But I haven't gotten to it yet.
All right. Well, look, before we go then, we've got a couple more minutes. It is largely inconsequential to most people, but it is fun. And that is the Xiaomi SU7 Ultra did a lap of the Nürburgring Nordschleife in 6 minutes, 48 seconds, 46 seconds. And it didn't even have full power. It like lost power for about 12 seconds if you watch this this video. Laps of any racetrack for car makers mean zero to the rest of us. But this is particularly interesting because this is a company that makes, I was going to say knockoff Apple Watches, but they're probably very good. I've not tested one. They're probably very good Apple Watch alternatives and wearables and mobile phones. And here they are putting a race car together. Yes, it's a prototype and it's got a roll cage and it's stripped out inside and all that kind of stuff. They shipped two of them from China to Germany and it went around in 6 minutes 46, which is quicker than everything, basically. It's quicker than a Porsche Taycan and a Model S Plaid and a Rimac Nevera. It doesn't make any sense to my tiny brain. But the best I can do is watch the video that we're showing for our viewers on YouTube and Twitch, etc. Because it just hurts my brain to watch a car go this quickly, and it defies just logic of how quickly it's going. It's like a video game watching this.
It's worth mentioning that this is not a series production intent car or based on one. It's full prototype, but awesome. So cool. Love to see these companies taking performance seriously. On the other hand, just a quick praise. This thing looks awesome. It looks well set up. It looks crazy. I mean, the new production car record is 6 minutes 29 with AMG One right now. And this is not far off of that in like from a cell phone manufacturer. What the heck is going on? It's so cool. I love everything about this. But I did watch, and we're going to do a little out of spec podcast on it, is the Xiaomi SU7, the Ultra, but not the prototype one, whatever the spicy one is.
Yeah.
Lost brakes on a track, interestingly, recently, and had a major accident into a wall, and it seemed totally avoidable. So I'm not sure what was going on there, but wow, this is cool though.
Yeah,
did you watch the video itself, Kyle? Like this part, the thing that we have on the screen now?
Yeah.
I was watching it last night because I didn't watch the whole thing when it first came up, and I was just like, man, this seems like, it's kind of wild to watch how fast it's taking, everything is just like kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah,
you've done this. Well, you've been on the Nürburgring a bunch of times, right? So
yeah, it's a full race car.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
Yeah, nothing about this is related to the stock car, really.
Right, it's got a carbon fiber skin that doesn't even have the same, like the production version of the Ultra will have like a metal skin on it, and it'll be. I think it's going to be very similar though to the Taycan GT as far as like the real lap time. Wow. Once they put all the weight back into it.
Yeah.
But again, this is a company that until now you've known for making mobile phones, wearables, watches, and they're doing this, which is amazing. So yeah, go watch Misha's channel because he, firstly, is a legend, but he calls it a fake Nürburgring record, which is, as Kyle says, it's not a real car, and it's not the car that you think. But even then, the SU7 is something like 120,000 US. Equivalent, which is still a fabulous amount of money, but not, wild amounts of money. No, it's
amazing performance for the money.
So,
because it's not just straight line performance, it's brakes, hopefully, assuming that's actually dialed, but suspension, steering, all the other stuff you would expect to be dialed in. Software looks really cool.
So, this like Taycan Performance for like $100,000 less. It's Taycan GT.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like that's kind of, I don't know subjectively how it feels, but in terms of lap times, yes. Right. But we all know
it's not. Yeah, car isn't really lap time, right? Yeah. I mean, Porsche, you know, ask a lot of money for their vehicles, but you know, for good reason too. They've you know, they feel good. They have steering feel that no one can really touch, I feel like. And yeah, it's just everything, and the heritage, of course, you're also paying for it. So some of that, but still.
Look at that. We are bang on time as well. We'll call it a show. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for watching, by the way, boys and girls in the audience. You are, as always, legends for supporting us in the comments and adding your voice to the conversation. We couldn't do this without you. If you're watching the YouTube version of the podcast, either live or in delay, help us if you hit the like button. And if you can subscribe to get our stuff in the future, you know how that works. But if you just hit the like button, it tells other people like you, who might be interested in this, that, hey, you might want to watch this. That little recommended thing on the side, that's where we would show up, and it helps us build the podcast, and it's really appreciated if you would do that. You can find us all in the usual places on social media, all of us individually. And if you want to leave a comment on the YouTube show, if you listen to the audio version of this, it's probably easier to go to the YouTube channel. Just leave a comment there, because we do get back to everybody if you ask a question, even if the answer is, oh, we don't know, but we'll do our best to answer that. So give us a thumbs up and a subscribe on the channel. Enjoy the extra hour in bed on Sunday morning, gentlemen. My friends in the US, your clocks fall back this weekend. So enjoy Sunday. You'll be able to an extra hour in bed. And whatever you want to do with that, make the most of it. Thank you very much for watching, as always. We will see you very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.